Just after 8 o'clock Sunday morning, Cinco de Mayo. You are listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM at 1340 AM, flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. I will not get to say that much longer. Well, 2018, I guess you can say it forever. By the way, I'm Brian Feldman. I'm a little discombobbled here, as Jose says, man. Not a lot of sleep, but yeah, maybe too much Red Bull. This is Out of Line, and we are right here every Sunday morning at this time live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. Also in studio, directly in front of me on your radio dial, Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent, next fall again, hopefully, and Out of Line producer, among many other duties, Chris Magnum Chapman, and roaming around the studio with a tripod and our camera phone in hand. Always down for tossing in his dos pesos every time he passes a live mic. You'll hear from him, Mr. Jose Sudden Death Valente. And we are also streaming live on the LV Sports Network. You can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM. And as I mentioned, you can watch us on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. The show is live, so callers are heard. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
And they're into the stretch. Country House on the outside. Coda Water down toward the rail. Maximum Security keeps on fighting. War of Will is there too as they come to the final furlong. It is Country House on the outside. Maximum Security, so dead game. He keeps battling on. Maximum Security. Country House 1-2 down to the line. Maximum Security wins the Kentucky Derby. And then it was Country House second, followed by Coda Water third. And in behind them, Master Fencer, who was closing late inside of Tacitus. It's Maximum Security. He's never lost a race, and he wins it under Luis Saez.
There is an objection that has been posted on the board, so it is unofficial for the moment. There you see the unofficial order of finish.
He did come out at the top of the stretch, nearing the top of the stretch. He impeded the one-horse War of Will. Mm-hmm.
Maximum Security moved out of lane before he was clear, forcing the rider of number one, War of Will, to check up a little bit.
Yes! They disqualified him.
They did. So for the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby, the horse that crossed the line first has been disqualified. After the objection, Country House wins the Kentucky Derby with Flavian Pratt at 65-1.
65-1. That pays $132.40 if you put $2 on it. What's on Tap is sponsored by our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. On Tap this fine first morning in May. It is the first Sunday morning in May. It is also Cinco de Mayo. And at the Post, fact this is about stewards changing. Make that making history. Speaking of decision makers changing history, it's been over a week since the Golden Knights went down to the Sharks in round one of the playoffs. Are you over it yet? Will the players ever get over it? We'll find that out as time goes on. And when talking NHL right now, how about the Carolina Hurricanes? Can you say hottest team in hockey? Plus, there's a birthday I want to acknowledge on the show today. I think you'll agree that even though this person is very close to me personally, he's pretty damn special. And in my eyes and his patient's eyes, he is truly blazing. Plus, today's Las Vegas Aviators Report features a one-on-one with Eric Campbell, a current aviator that was once a member of the Las Vegas 51s, the only guy that played regularly at Cashman Field. So, man, I got to believe it's night and day for this dude. What's on Tap does come your way thanks to the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice. When looking for answers about home financing, check out cardinalfinancial.com.
This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
It's a fact. In less than 2 weeks, in two different sports, history was changed by officiating. The first incident that took place last week in Game 7 of the Vegas Golden Knights-San Jose Sharks game, I'm sorry, it wasn't justified. This most recent incident at the Kentucky Derby was. Oh, play, yeah, there you go.
Well, I'm still a little bit numb about this. You know, it's a very bittersweet victory. You know, but there was a horse that, you know, the horse that crossed the wire first bothered two horses quite badly at the head of the stretch, you know, just at the 5/16th pole. And it cost those two horses any chance of hitting the board or their chance to win a Kentucky Derby. I know it was a difficult decision for the stewards. I think they looked long and hard, and I don't think anybody wants to take a horse down in the Derby. But I think due to the fact that, you know, there was a foul and it cost two horses any position in the race, I think it's something they had to do.
You know what? It really hasn't hit me, Jim. I'm sure tomorrow I'm gonna be like, but right now I'm still kind of not sure what's happening.
First you heard from Bill Mott, the trainer for Country House, obviously ecstatic, trying to hold it back. You know, I don't want to win like this. Yes, you do. 65-1 odds. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. And the other guy, of course, you heard Jason Service, the trainer for Maximum Security, the favorite that won. Guys, I don't know if you know this, Chris, that Maximum Security, that change, it's $9 million difference when they made that change.
Well, first of all, I mean, look, there's two ways to handle this if you're Bill Mott. The first thing is you could handle it the way he did and be very classy and say the right things, or you could be complete pieces of garbage like the way the San Jose Sharks have handled their stealing of Game 7. You could handle it two different ways. People will remember the classiness and the high road taken by Bill Mott. He said the right things. Deep down inside, you know he really doesn't care that Maximum Security was DQ'd. At the end of the day,
doesn't care. He's thrilled.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he's happy as hell. But listen, that's out of his ass right now.
That's, I mean, the difference between having class and being trash. Yeah. The San Jose Sharks are selling T-shirts with Joe Pavelski's name, calling it like the Pavelski payback, and it shows 3-0 with 10:47 to go in the game. They should put black and white stripes on that shirt. Because it's so trashy and so low class. And you know what? I was thinking about it. I'm still not over it, by the way.
Well, yeah, obviously.
But you know, I was thinking about it. I don't know if there's a fan base in sports that deserves less than San Jose Sharks fans, because they are complete losers.
Yeah, for the way they're handling it. Well, I do want to say, you know, we're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But, you know, as far as the Derby went, what an amazing race that was overall. I love when they race in the mud. You know, I've been to the Kentucky Derby twice. I went when Winning Colors won the Kentucky Derby. That's how long ago that was.
That was like 1988.
Yeah. Two of the horses in the race were actually prehistoric horses.
Yeah, well, they were mastodons.
But
with Roman chariots behind them.
Winning Colors, by the way, was a filly. I also saw Sunday Silence win.
Oh, I remember both. You know what? Okay. I don't remember all the winners, but those are two that definitely stand out.
They were fun to watch. I was on the infield for Winning Colors, and it was pouring rain. We were sliding around in the mud by about before the Kentucky Derby started. I didn't care that it was pouring rain. I didn't feel the rain. I was back in the day when I was in college, and I was having a really good time. But it is a spectacle. I got to tell you, it is one of the coolest live events. Even though it takes less than 2 minutes to run the race, it is so cool to actually go to Churchill Downs, and you feel the history. Every woman's trying to outdo the other one with the specialty hats on. You drink a mint julep. It's really kind of cool.
Mint julep. Julep's are nasty.
They're not real good. They're not real good. I mean, don't mistake them. People
say, you ever have one?
I have no idea what that is. Oh, it doesn't sound great, though, to be honest with you.
People misconstrue them for mojitos. A mojito.
See, I don't like mojitos, so I wouldn't.
See, I like mojitos.
I like mojitos too.
It is not a mojito.
You like sweet drinks? You like sweet drinks? Is that what you're saying?
I would rather drink rubbing alcohol. than a mint julep. Okay, I'm just saying. That's my opinion.
So you're telling me not to have it, guys.
Yeah. No, you're not missing the damn thing.
If you go
eat the flower, throw the drink away.
Have a beer.
Yeah. If you're gonna have one, eat the flower, throw the drink away. Yeah, you'll be better off that way.
Duly noted.
It tastes much better than the drink.
Oh my God, it's horrible. But it's a really cool thing. But in the Kentucky Derbies, we said an objection led to an inquiry that led to a disqualification. It is the first time in 145 years of the running of the Kentucky Derby that a horse has ever been removed from winning the race. Watching the replay, there is no question that the horse should have been DQ'd. I didn't disagree with
legitimate
that at all.
Legitimate disqualification.
But, you know, when you look at this, okay, it was incredible. Do you know in the history of the races, it is the third largest odds to ever win a Triple Crown race, the second to win the Derby. The only other person to have higher odds in the Kentucky Derby, 91 to 1, Dunrail in 1913.
Yeah,
I mean, and back then they didn't even put horseshoes on the horses when they ran.
I'm guessing the odds makers know a little bit more today than they did back in 1913.
They do, but you know the track, when you see conditions like that, it really does open up the race a great deal. And it's always good when you see those conditions, guys. And I got there late. I was going to the Wildfire Casino over in Henderson, not far from where I live, and I was going to put the bet in, and I got there late, and I'm glad I did. I would have lost, but I was looking at long shots. When it's a muddy track, that is the time to take the risk and go out on a limb and bet on a long shot. Now, but the whole problem of this is, what are the odds of Country House winning the Triple Crown?
65-1, obviously.
I'm just saying, being realistic, for him even winning the Preakness. Now, look, it ran a great race. The horse ran a great race. He really did well, stayed outside, really was not impeded that much. But can he win another race, let alone the Triple Crown? I think it's impossible, man,
It's not impossible, right? Because didn't we have Alex's Lemonade Stand a couple years ago? Was a real long shot to win the Derby, ended up winning the Preakness, and then fell short in the Belmont.
Yeah.
You know, here's
track
the
track conditions, I think, are going to be everything.
Well, and here's the problem. I don't know enough about this horse to know if he's a closer, if he's a front runner, if he's a middle-of-the-pack horse, and he just got lucky because of the mud. The reality is, horse racing today, and I don't know a ton about it, but what I see from what I watch, a lot of these horses that were supposed to run well in the Derby that didn't, their owners will hold them out of the Preakness and save them for the Belmont. So they're fresh going into the Belmont.
Which is the longest race, by the way.
Yeah, so, what's his name? Country, whatever it is.
Country House.
He will be tired by the time he gets to the Belmont, assuming he wins the Preakness, which is a long shot that he wins the Preakness.
What are the odds that this horse even runs all three races? I mean, a 65-1 long shot? What if he's not even ready for the next race?
When you win the Derby, you find a way to run the other two races, yeah. unless something happens to him in the Preakness.
Like Barbaro a couple years ago. Remember, Barbaro won the Kentucky Derby, and then, what did he break his leg in the start gate at
Big
the Preakness?
Red, remember Big Red?
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
But that put him down. It was terrible.
Big Brown.
Big Brown.
I think Barbaro was put down too, right? Yeah. Remember there was all that online stuff? Save Barbaro.
That's the bummer of the whole thing.
The sad part of horse racing, right?
But it is. You know, I'm just looking at, though, you got two guys over 50, two jockeys over 50 racing in that race. Mike Smith, of course, won the Triple Crown at 52 last year. But, you know, the bottom line is, how scary is it to get on one of those horses on a muddy track that they could slip and fall, especially when you're in your 50s? I mean, the bottom line is, you're in your 50s, you fall off a horse and you get trampled by other horses. Here's what's happening. You're dying. It's that simple. I give those guys all the credit in the world.
They got some grapefruits, man.
I'll tell you what, the stones are boulders. And I give them all the credit in the world. Love Mike Smith. Love the Kentucky Derby, it's crazy, but certain things just get you up. And the Kentucky Derby every year is something that captivates me, and I enjoy watching it. I really enjoy trying to pick out by watching the horses, because really, when I make my bet, I try to make it at the very end and watch every horse as they come out and see kind of the way they're acting. Are they jumping around? Are they
like
a little bit hyper?
Trot, see how they
you know,
look.
And yeah, you know, the ones that are hyper, I'm thinking, man, they put a rubber band around the thing's nuts. Bet on that horse. You know, I mean, you know, it really is a spectacle. It was kind of too bad to see what happened. But my point of asking was Country House capable of winning the Triple Crown? Because, you know, obviously, in my opinion, the best horse in the field was Maximum Security. He looked very strong. And I think this horse wouldn't surprise anybody if it won the Belmont, I mean the Preakness, and then the Belmont. I think that was the best horse in the field. I think odds makers had it right. And I think, you know, what happened was, according to the jockey, now let me ask you guys this real quick before we end this segment. Do you think the jockey was lying? Do you think he screwed up? Or do you think the horse, how does the horse hear the crowd and start going four lanes over? Or do you think he kind of lost a grip on the reins maybe because it was raining and maybe he lost a handle and let the horse get outside a bit?
From what I saw, if you see the horse on that turn, he's pulling the horse and the horse's head is going the other way. I think the horse was already losing control itself and he was trying to get the horse to go back.
He said the horse, the first thing he said, the very first thing he said when he was questioned after the raced is he said that the horse heard the crowd. In the corner, it heard the crowd because when you come to home, that's where the grandstand is. So it does make sense. But he said when they hit that quarter pole and were on their way home, the horse heard the crowd and started steering off, and he pulled him, you know, he got him back on track. But I just wonder, is it a jockey error where he's saying the horse heard the crowd? Because how the hell does the horse hear the crowd? It's raining like hell outside. The mud is flapping, so it's going to be louder than your normal race because you've got the rain and them slopping in the mud. I want to know how the horse is hearing the crowd. I have heard horses have tremendous vision. I didn't know that they had Superman's hearing. So, I mean, did the guy really, did you believe the jockey? Or do you think that's called the plan called Save Ass?
Well, I mean, horse people
I mean,
know.
I'm just saying, right?
You know, I'm sorry.
The thing is, horse people know the truth, right? So we don't know, right? We really don't know. But I think, you know, they say horses have a mind of their own. So who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if the horse may have done something wrong. I mean, I can't imagine the jockey, knowing the consequences he would face for lying, is going to make it up.
No, and you would think that, but then again, the crowd doesn't know, and I guess maybe if you really break down the film, you can see whether it was driver error or the horse be getting spooked to a bit. But either way, I hated seeing him lose. He definitely impeded the one horse's, you know, where the horse had a, what do they call it, stand down
it
for
was
a minute.
Clear, yeah.
But the bad part is even though that horse broke, even though Maximum Security broke in that turn, he still was able to pull it together on a muddy track and take the field. And that was what was really impressive to me, where I said after watching the race, that is the best horse in the field, deservedly the favorite, and it's unfortunate that he didn't win, although what makes it fortunate, had you bet on Country House right now, you're saying, man, it's really fortunate that horse did win. You know, you got to. On muddy tracks, if I learn nothing from this Kentucky Derby, man, every time I see foul weather in a big horse race, I am definitely going to try betting an underdog or two because you just don't know. It really changes everything. Unless, you know, a horse, they call them what it mutters. It's a horse that runs in the mud on a regular basis. But a lot, most of the horses in this field, they were saying, did not have experience running on a track that was muddy. So We'll see what happens. You know, when they come down the road, I'm just going to be interested to see if in fact the dude eventually it comes out that it was a driver error. Because I just said, I'm like, I don't know, man. What would I say in that situation? You don't want to say to the world, man, I screwed up. You know, you want other rides. You want other chances. And that's the kind of thing that they could potentially hold against you. Listen, on the other side, we're going to come back. We've got Nightcap. And I was going to have an interview with John Merrill. I'm going to try to get that out next week, though. I really do want you guys to hear it. It was pretty cool. And John Merrill, I know Chris feels this way about him. One of my favorite players on the team. Always accommodating. A quiet, humble guy who worked his ass off last year and especially earlier this year to become an integral part of the defensive scheme of the Vegas Golden Knights. And I think he'll be there for years. And I love seeing a guy that's humble, that works really hard, that was on the outside looking in last year when it came to scratches. And this year he was on the ice for every single playoff game. And he would have been throughout the playoffs had they gone on farther. And I'll try to get that for you next week. Also coming up a little bit, we've got Blaze in a pretty cool segment. And all the things we're talking about are kind of blazing today to a degree. And, of course, the Las Vegas Aviators report, a team that after starting off, I think, 15-4, they've gone they've lost 10 of their last 13 games. So they got to turn things around, but you still got to get out to the ballpark. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio. We'll be right back.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Nightcap, and it's been a week, a little over a week. Matter of fact, a week and a half, we'll say, since Game 7 took place in San Jose, and the Vegas Golden Knights with a 3-goal lead and about 10 minutes to go in the game. Got a very unfortunate miscall, we'll call it that, and sent Cody Eakin into the locker room, kind of unsure of what the hell happened, and it put the San Jose Sharks on a 5-minute penalty, which they scored 4 goals in, and the game went from being 3-0 Golden Knights to 4-3 San Jose Sharks in 5 minutes, literally a little bit less than 5 minutes, actually, and the Knights did recover. Jonathan Marchessault put one in with about 16 seconds to go in the game. And then They lost in overtime. Back-to-back overtime games to end the series, game 6 and 7. And most people that I talk to, a lot of people are over it. There's still a lot of people like Magnum who are still very bitter. I'm somewhere in the middle. As time's gone on, people have really pounded it into my head that, you know, it's the sport. You forget about it. You move on. The rule will probably be changed. There'll be a rule for evictions. I'm sure that, like goals being reviewed in Toronto, when you're in, especially in the postseason, if you're going to evict someone and put somebody on a 5-minute major penalty, you'll review it to make sure that it's the right call. That'll probably come out of this, which I think is a good thing when you've got that kind of technology. But the bottom line is, it was a bogus call that everyone should acknowledge and understand that, you know, it changed history. Did it change history? No, history is going to be made the way it's going to be made, but the truth of the matter is the Knights don't get a chance to do something that they probably deserve to do, because again, and I can't remember where I read this, but some guy that was a millionaire said if he would have had the option to put, you know, millions of dollars on the Knights with 10 minutes to go in the game before the penalty was called, who wouldn't have done that? I mean, you put everything you own on that. There's no way they're losing if that penalty doesn't happen.
Well, there becomes a point where you get over it when the San Jose Sharks are eliminated from the playoffs. You don't ever get over it if San Jose goes on to win the Stanley Cup, because at that point you know it's tarnished and you know it was stolen from the Golden Knights, because it, I think the Golden Knights would have beaten the Avalanche. It looks like Dallas is going to come out of that the other series, although St. Louis. I think had St. Louis won that series, the Golden Knights would have had a real tough problem with St. Louis. I just think the style that the Blues play would have been very tough for the Golden Knights. And the Golden Knights did not play Dallas when Dallas had Matt Zuccarello, even though they swept the Stars. But I think when the Sharks are eliminated, if they get eliminated, it's a lot easier to put behind you.
Who's wearing Martin Jones's jersey, by the way? Do you know who's wearing that jersey the last couple games?
It's almost like they went and signed Dominic Hasek,
Something happened. They got him out of retirement, or, I mean, Artur Zerbe from years ago.
Well, something's up because the funny thing is Jones's numbers against everyone else in the league are really good.
No, they are.
It's just against the Golden Knights.
Do you know that
his
playoff save percentage is better than Marc-Andre Fleury, and he's played over 50 playoff games, so he's played one or two.
He took him to the Stanley Cup Finals a couple years ago and had an amazing game in Game 5 when they were facing elimination. They ended up losing in 6 in that series, but the thing is, I think...
I hate him.
Like I said, you get over it when San Jose is eliminated from the playoffs. It stings still because you still feel like the Golden Knights could have gone far, and I still think these guys feel that they could have gone far, but the reality is, the season's over, but I think if San Jose goes on to win the Cup, I think this one stings for a really, really, really long time, because you know they didn't deserve it, because they should have been knocked out in the first round.
No, I agree. You know, I wonder, because, you know, like I've said before, I've talked about how, you know, I've warmed up to players like in Detroit. I never thought, like, if you would have told me that Chris Chelios was going to end his career as a Red Wing after he's a Blackhawk, a Canadian, I hated the guy. He comes to Detroit, and I end up loving him. He's one of the nicest, most accommodating athletes there was. He didn't play like he would have been, but he was a really good guy. Marc-Andre Fleury blew my socks off. I could not stand him for what he did to the Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Finals back in 2008. And all of a sudden, Marc-Andre Fleury comes to Vegas, and there is probably not an athlete that I can say I like as better than a Marc-Andre. Maybe a few close that I like. He is just unbelievable. Accommodating, nice. No matter how bad his the game was, Marc-Andre Fleury finds a way to be accommodating. Incredible. But I wonder if a guy like Burns came to the Vegas Golden Knights, if I could ever like this dude. Well, I mean, he's a hell of a player. And he didn't play well against the Knights this year in the postseason. He did not. But still, we know his capability. Just, he bothers the hell out of me. I can't stand him.
I don't.
Couture, would you like him being a Golden?
I don't like Logan Couture at all.
He's an unbelievable player.
Well, he's also an unbelievable actor.
I hate him.
But I think, you know, the funny thing is, when you're a fan of a team, and you know, me being in the media, not a fan, but you know, certainly you build relationships with guys. I look at a guy like Ryan Reeves. He is hated by 30 other teams in the NHL. Actually, I take that back. The St. Louis fans love him. Apparently, he was even though he was only in Pittsburgh a short period of time, they loved him there. But a lot of other teams, they don't like him. Why? Because he's a tough guy.
He's nasty.
He can change the outcome of a game with a hit. But also, if you think about it, He scored a game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup Finals, and he's also scored a game-winning goal in the Western Conference Finals to win the Conference Finals, which is a lot more than a lot of other guys around the league can say. Ryan Reaves is a guy who, when he's not on your team, you don't like him. When he's on your team, he's one of your favorites because of the way he plays.
You know what he is, Chris, and it's a good analogy, but Ryan Reaves is one of a few players, because typically when somebody's on the ice and you say you have to account for him, it's because he is offensively dangerous. Ryan Reaves you have to account for because he's just flat out dangerous.
Well, the way,
and I mean, I love that about him. You have to know, here's a fourth line winger. And you have to worry about where he is in the ice, because if you aren't paying attention and you don't have your head on a swivel, this guy will make you remember your grandmother, because you'll be in a coma.
Just ask Tom Wilson about that.
Yeah, I'm serious.
He ran into a lion in the jungle.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes of the
year. I love that. Love
it. But, you know, the funny thing, the way I describe Ryan Reaves is Rocky in Rocky IV, because when he first gets to Vegas, the fans aren't sure what to expect, right? They don't really like him because he's got a reputation. Then those first two games, which he was certainly justified because the Kings took a cheap shot at Oscar Lindbergh, gave him an injury, knocked him out for a while. The very next game at T-Mobile Arena, Ryan Reaves is on fire. I mean, he is hitting everyone and everything on the Kings. And all of a sudden, fans are like, oh my God, George McPhee traded for this guy? Fast forward 2 months, and he's a fan favorite. Right, I just picture Ryan Reaves standing on the ice with a microphone. People change. If I can change, you can change. Everybody can change.
You know, the thing is there are certain villains in every sport that they're. It's going to be very hard to embrace them when they come to your team. It just is. Like, a guy like Bill Laimbeer had to retire a Piston. I don't know where he would have gone where anyone would have accepted that.
No way. Well,
what about Dennis Rodman, though?
Rodman was a different bird. Literally a different bird. But Dennis Rodman was something different because of his mad skills, his ability to play defense and rebound, and he played the game with such passion that he could even go to their number one rival, the Bulls, and get accepted in Chicago. Laimbeer could have never been a Bull. He would have been killed his first day leaving the arena. But see, my point is Ryan Reaves is one of those guys that has an infectious personality, an infectious smile, and an infectious effect on his teammates. So Ryan Reaves is a guy that will immediately be taken in by his teammates. Everyone's going to be happy, like, thank God you're on our team. And the fans, he's the type of player that they might go and hate it. 2 weeks after he's in your town, you're going to love him and you're going to see Ryan Reaves jerseys start to appear. That would have never happened with guys like Laimbeer. There's certain players that are going to be villains when they're somewhere else, but when they come to your team, you're going to embrace them pretty quickly, and he truly is one of those guys. He is a natural leader in the fact that, number one, he's a tough guy, and he's a protector, and those guys are always leaders, but number two, because Ryan Reaves says what's on his mind, and Ryan Reaves just fits in. And that's something he's going to do wherever he goes. And a lot of times, tough guys, man, they have trouble fitting in. He's a guy that just fits in. He becomes one of the boys right away. And one of my favorite nights, and I think all of us can probably say that about him, he is one of your favorite nights to watch play the game. He is a lot of fun. And the bottom line is, Chris, it's funny, we'll be up in the press box, and whenever I hear a loud thud against the boards, I know that his line's on the ice and he had something to do with it. And almost every time I'm right.
Yeah, well, him and Will Carrier, they're out there delivering hits. I mean, both of them have the capability to score goals. I mean, Will Carrier, I think, had 7 or 8 this year, maybe a few more. But, you know, I think those two guys, they bring out the best in each other, because Carrier has a lot of speed, where Reaves is more powerful, right? But neither one of them shy away from hits. They don't shy away from contact. And I think that's really what you want a fourth line, right? You want them to dump the puck in. You want them to go in and just crush people
disruptors.
In the corners.
They are disruptors. That's what your fourth line. Even, you know, and you corrected me before with Pierre-Edouard Belmar, because his job is to be a disruptor. Always be around the puck. And he is a guy that does have a nose for the puck. Doesn't have a nose for the back of the net, but definitely has a nose for the puck.
And he might be the toughest of the bunch.
Yeah.
Because he...
Remember last year, every time you go to the locker room, it got to the point, like, what bruise is going to show up on Belmar's face today? Every time I saw him, talk about Rocky, it looked like he was in a Rocky movie every game.
Well, you know what's funny? You talk to Pierre-Edouard Belmar, and after locker cleanout day, when we spoke to him, he kind of talked a little bit about his story, about how he came to the NHL, because I asked him, and this was in response to my question, because I asked him if he felt like being a guy who's come from a non-traditional hockey country, he's from France, grew up outside of Paris. There's not a lot of hockey players from France. I mean, there have been a few, but Belmar, not only did he come from France, he didn't even come over till he was in his early 30s. Or maybe his late 20s. He was about 29, 30, 31 when he came to the NHL. I think he's 35 now. So he's not a young guy. And he talked about how when he was playing in Sweden, he saw these guys who were, they were bruisers. And he saw that they were able to get into the NHL. And he said, you know, maybe there's a spot for a guy like me there. And I think he went to Philadelphia first. I think that was his first stop. I know he played in Philadelphia, but I don't know if that was his first stop. But and then he worked his way. And he's a guy, I remember my cousin's a Flyers fan. When they drafted Belmar, I asked him, and he said, you will love this guy because he does all the little things that don't show up on the stat sheets. He said he will block shots. He'll take a punch. He's willing to take a stick to the face. He will do everything and anything to help his team win.
There's an old saying for guys like him. He's a blue-collar player.
Well, I think he's beyond blue-collar.
They're guys that get down and dirty, man. They're the nuts and bolts.
He's like blue-collar, blue shirt, blue pants, blue
the
shoes.
The nuts and bolts, yes. Man. The nuts and bolts. That's a guy like him that you got to have that stabilizes everything else. And a guy that, you know, just always is there for his teammates, likes to be one of the last guys off the ice. I mean, he's that kind of guy. Listen, before we I want to get to some of the other stuff. And since we're talking about hockey and the hockey playoffs, the Carolina Hurricanes are truly blazing. Blazing is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango. As a matter of fact, I want to mention to Buffalo Wild Wings, starting tomorrow, Teacher Appreciation Week, 20% off for all educators and faculty at all the Buffalo Wild Wings locations in the Valley. I think there's 10 of them, every one of them, all week long. Go on in, and you will get 20% off your bill at Buffalo Wild Wings all week, man. Definitely head out there, and especially my favorite one out at the Montecito Crossing Plaza, 215 in North Durango, which is the one that sponsors the show. Two happy hours every day, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And again, football season, not too far away. It'll be before you know it. We'll be there on Monday nights hosting the best Monday night football party in town. Replica jerseys, wing parties, all kinds of cool stuff, and appreciate them a great deal. And you want to talk about blazing. There's a couple things blazing right now in the National Hockey League. Like I said, the Carolina Hurricanes. My God, I'm all over the board right now. But they are truly blazing. You are talking about a team that has won six straight playoffs games and advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals after beating the 2018 Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals in seven games, and then just got done sweeping the New York Islanders after round one. Many felt could challenge for the cup. In the six-game win streak, the Hurricanes have given up a total of 10 goals. And you have to start talking about the defense of this team and their two goaltenders that have got them to this point. But the Carolina Hurricanes are a special bunch of guys right now. Win, lose, or draw from this point forward, they have definitely exceeded anything and everything you would think that they would get accomplished and done. They've done it, and that's it. I'm telling you, they are absolutely incredible. Also blazing, Canelo Alvarez, okay? The fight was better than I expected. I'll give him that. And with last night's win, Canelo became the first Mexican fighter to hold three belts simultaneously, the WBA, WBC, and the IBF. A pretty good fight. And I thought Jacobs won four of the last five rounds in that fight. I really did. I thought he for sure won the 12th. I thought he won the 10th, and I thought he won the 9th handily, and I'll even give him the 8th. The 11th round was Canelo's, but you could see who the stronger fighter was at the end of the fight. And if this had been an old-school 15-round fight, I think Canelo loses the fight.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Three of the last four rounds, he looked like he was getting tired.
I have to ask, and I'll ask Jose too, but when you look back at his legacy, where does Canelo rate among the all-time greats? Because I think he's really, really high. I mean, we are looking at, and I'm not a Canelo fan. I like Triple G, so I'll be honest when I say this. I think when we look at Canelo and we look at him objectively, we look at maybe a top 10, top 15 fighter all time in his weight class?
I agree 100%.
Maybe Chris,
top 10. Top 10 for sure.
Top 10.
Do you know what I said before the show? I was talking to Jose, and I was saying, you know, my dad, we're going to try to get a hold of him, trouble getting a hold of him right now. But, you know, my dad's a huge fight guy. Loved Muhammad Ali. I grew up with just huge fights. When I came to Vegas on my very first trip here in the spring of 1981, late spring, early summer, I got to go see Jerry Cooney fight Larry Holmes at Caesar's Palace.
And the great white hope, Jerry Cooney.
Yeah, my dad. Well, the funny was, here's the thing. My dad's so happy. He has a good run at the craps table that morning, and I come to the craps table, and there's a ticket, and Leroy Neiman had done the painting on the ticket, and I get the ticket for that fight. Wow. $200 seat. I'm all excited. I get to the fight. I am so far away in the Caesars Palace parking lot. When Jerry Cooney hit Larry Holmes in the nuts, I thought that I'm like, oh my God, what'd he crack his sternum? The guy next to me got binoculars. He goes, no, he goes, Cooney hit him in the nuts. Because I couldn't see. I was so far away
that
I couldn't even see. $200 seat. This is back in 81.
Got it.
Now that seat would cost you $1,000
easily. Just sit
there. But the whole, my point about telling the story is my dad was just a huge fight guy. If you were to call my dad up and ask him about Floyd Mayweather, he'd be able to give you a little soliloquy. You ask him Canelo Alvarez, he'd probably say, who? Who's he?
Well,
that is my point. Is boxing is so down compared to where it was? It can, like you said, that maybe top 15 for Canelo in his weight class.
I think maybe top 10 is probably a pretty
the back end of
I
the
say
top.
I say top 10 for sure. The one thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about though was the freaking commentating. Sergio Mora should not be a commentator. First of all, you were horrible. The only highlight you had in your career was when you were on The Contender. And then I love Kenny Mayne, but you got to get more excited, man. I mean, I'm used to HBO, Showtime, like these guys, and the Zone's just not doing it.
I heard a lot of really negative things about
right?
What is it? DAZN, DAZN?
DAZN.
And you know, I know Brian Kenny's a part of it. I like Brian Kenny. I think he's
there. You go, Brian Kenny. I'm sorry.
He's good, but to me, there's nothing like Al Bernstein.
Oh no!
I mean, and I'll go to HBO. Larry Merchant. You know, I mean,
I'll even take Paulie Malignaggi, bro.
I like Paulie Malignaggi.
Yeah.
Well, maybe because I got some Sicilian blood from Brooklyn, just like Paulie. But you know, me and him would talk about some Scangeal if we ever got together. But you know, I'll be honest. I think Canelo. I think a lot of people discount the guy because of the fact that he did lose to Mayweather.
He lost to Triple G.
He did lose to Triple G.
In the first fight.
But Triple G, I think, is one of those guys who I think if you look at him, his body of work, it's really not that impressive. Canelo's body of work is pretty impressive. I mean, he's beaten every top guy with the exception of Mayweather.
But look how young he was. So you got to give him credit for taking that fight when he took that fight.
Oh, yeah, anyone's going to take that fight, Jose. I mean, I would take that fight.
It's a payday for sure.
I'm taking that fight. Sign me up right now.
So let me ask you guys a question. This is what Triple G said on Twitter. I saw no emotions, nothing special today. It was a nice sparring match. Boring. They should have given more to the fans. What do you think about that?
I don't think he's wrong.
It wasn't the most exciting fight I've seen in my life.
But I think going in, I think most people knew that you probably weren't going to see a knockout.
No.
Right? I mean, neither one of these guys.
There were some good flurries. There were a few good flurries.
And even Jacob said it in the pre-fight interview. I have to win decisively if I don't win by a knockout.
Yeah, and Daniel Jacobs, I think, is a guy who maybe doesn't get the credit he deserves because he's a really good fighter, too. I mean, I don't think necessarily you judge a fighter by how many knockouts he has, right? I mean, if that was the case, nobody would ever look at Mayweather and say he's an all-time great. But the reality is, Mayweather is an all-time, and I can't stand the guy. But Mayweather is probably one of the top five fighters of all time.
Yeah, well, yeah, without question. I mean, look, the number of fights, I mean, the body of work.
I don't care about the record. I look at the way he fights. And Mayweather,
no, I understand,
Mayweather to me is, A, I think he's the best defensive fighter maybe ever. You know, I mean, who was the other guy? Sweet Pea Whitaker was a really good defensive fighter, right? But I don't think Sweet Pea Whitaker had the run that Mayweather had. I mean, the knock Mayweather's always going to have is he picked and chose who he fought, when he fought them.
No doubt about
it. He fought guys at the tail end like he did with De La Hoya. You know, he fought guys on their way up like he did with Canelo. He never really fought any of these great fighters in their prime, right? He never fought Pacquiao in his prime. You know, I mean, people will not look at, oh, he knocked out Ricky Hatton. It's like, well, Ricky Hatton was a club fighter.
No, I'm not going to disagree with you, but you can't start discounting Floyd Mayweather.
Well, I think you could discount his opponents.
Some of them, for sure. For sure. I mean, but a lot of guys pick their fights. Or their
and that's the problem with boxing.
I will not disagree
that's
with
why,
it all.
You know what? I'll be honest. I'm not the biggest UFC guy, but you don't see that nonsense in UFC.
No.
Right? UFC gives the people what they want. There's no ducking.
There's not ducking. UFC gives the people what they want. Unfortunately, they don't pay the fighters according to what they're doing.
But that's not what this discussion is about.
I understand that.
The thing is, if you get knocked out in UFC, people don't say, oh, he's a bum.
No, well.
Right? Like McGregor got destroyed.
Not yet. In 20 years when the guy can't think because of all the shin bones he's taken to his forehead, he'll be a bum.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, that's another...
Wait till, like I said, the NFL, you think CTE is bad in the NFL? 25 years from now, come talk to me about the UFC fighters.
How do we get to this? I thought we were going to talk about the interview.
we got to take a break right now. Let's quickly go to break. We'll come back on the other side. We are going to have our Las Vegas Aviators report. Hopefully, we'll get my dad on the phone. I want to wish the guy happy birthday. An 81-year-old still practicing physician in Detroit who's got some pretty good insight on golf. And I know, you know, it's pretty cool. My brother had called me up last week and told me a little story about my dad watching Tiger Woods in the Masters. And, you know, I think I was probably going through about the same emotion. But I guess Magnum did get him on the phone. So my dad joins the phone now. It's Dr. Irwin Feldman, 81 years old tomorrow, and still a practicing physician in Michigan. It's pretty cool. It's an amazing guy's an amazing dude. And, Dad, welcome to the show. I haven't had you on in probably about a year since Father's Day. Happy early birthday to you, Dad. I'm just amazed. 81 years old tomorrow, and still working and loving what you do.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
So Dad, I got to ask you. You know, we watched history a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know that I've ever gotten that emotional over a sporting event in my life. I'm a pretty emotional guy, as you know, and I get hyped up probably over some stupid things with sports and all that. But, you know, something about that Masters tournament and watching what I watched that day, it brought something out of me I didn't know was there. Obviously, when Tiger Woods had his mess up, a lot of superstars have messed up in their life, but his was pretty bad and very public. And, you know, he paid dearly for it. He paid dearly for it emotionally, mentally. And physically, I think that probably even can drain on, as you know, being a doctor, Dad, when you've got all that stress on you emotionally and mentally, your body can break down physically as well. And that might have even helped enhance what Tiger Woods had wrong with him. But what he did a couple of weeks ago to come back when a few years ago you thought maybe that back surgery would end him, and with all the great players and how far they're hitting the ball today, it's almost miraculous what he did, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was absolutely amazing. I myself was emotional watching it. And when you think of the types of surgery he had, it was more than one. I can't believe that he came back and was that way. The only time I've ever been emotional like that,
that
was in the 1980s when I saw Jack Nicklaus come back when he was in his late 40s.
Yeah, at 46, still the oldest Masters winner, and that was that's when I started enjoying watching golf. Was in 86, watching Jack on the back nine when he made the turn in Amen Corner, and it was just one of the coolest things ever. I was never a very good golfer, as you know, but I really enjoy watching the sport much more now. And the Masters to me is like the Super Bowl or the NCAA tournaments. One event I just can't miss. Saturday and Sunday at the Masters, leave me alone. I'm locked up on my couch with some popcorn watching golf. And this year was as special as it gets. Dad, do you think now, I mean, he's 43 years old. You know, Jack Nicklaus won his last Masters, his last major at 46, and it had been a pretty big gap between when he won the one before and when he won the 86 Masters. Do you think Tiger Woods has the gas in his tank, the torque in his back, to be able to pull off and win three more majors and reach Jack?
Well, you know, I always thought it was all over with him. Couldn't do it, but you know, this may be the greatest golfer that ever lived, and he may really do it. I think he's going to win at least one more, though. I don't know if he'll get the four more, but I think or three more, but I think he will win one more.
I would love to see it. I'd love to see him win another U.S. Open. And for that matter, I'd love to see him win the British one more time. He's just so much fun to watch play that game. And it is just amazing with the galleries and the crowds and the distractions that I've never seen another golfer face. I mean, Arnold Palmer and Arnold's Army was pretty amazing back in the day. I don't remember it that much. It was kind of before my time. But I definitely remember the following Jack Nicklaus had. And really, it still paled in comparison to what Tiger Woods has. It is like literally going to a rock concert when this guy plays golf. I mean, you can't get a seat anywhere. People are shuffling all the time. And, you know, he gets aggravated every now and again, but somehow this guy puts it together. And the one thing I will say, Dad, and all the golfers, I have never seen a better scramble golfer than Tiger. I mean, how many times has this guy just been in unbelievable trouble and figured out a shot to get himself out of trouble and save par and occasionally even do birdie? There's never been anyone like Tiger Woods. And, you know, Jack Nicklaus, you know, I'll still say, until his record is broken, was the greatest golfer that I've ever seen play the game. But Tiger Woods is probably the most fun to watch of all golfers, because you just know when he starts charging, people get intimidated. They start watching the leaderboard, and it can change in a hurry. And, man, I can't imagine having to play golf with that guy on a Sunday in any tournament and having to deal with the galleries and the distractions that go along with him. And somehow he handles it and keeps going forward. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I truly hope he does beat Jack's record. I would love to see something like that in my lifetime. It'd be really cool, right?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility, but whatever he does from here on in is going to be amazing.
Yep, I agree. Well, Dad, before I let you go, how you feeling? Still working out there in Michigan. I know you're working to get back on the golf course, and I can't wait to see when you do that, but how you feeling? Everything good?
I'm trying. I haven't been able to play yet, but we'll see what happens. The weather gets nicer.
Well, I want to get him out there, that's why, you know, bringing up what Tiger did. My dad can definitely relate to back surgeries, both knees replaced, and it's amazing at 81 years old, I would still never bet on me against my dad on the golf course. I mean, the guy can still hit the ball straight. Dad, I appreciate you coming on today, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you very soon.
All right, thanks, Brian. Have a great day. Bye
you too.
Now.
Happy birthday again. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Dad. And that is my dad. He's an incredible man, 81 years old, still practicing medicine. Pretty cool. All right, real quickly, man, I want to get to the Las Vegas Aviators report. We'll play a speck of this interview. The Las Vegas Aviators, brought to you by the Las Vegas Aviators, brand-new stadium. The Las Vegas ballpark out in downtown Summerlin is awesome. I got a chance to talk with Eric Campbell, the only guy on this team that also was on the Las Vegas 51s. I'll talk with Eric Campbell. The last time I spoke with this guy was he was the Las Vegas 51, and we were in a different part of town, man. What did you think the first time? I know you heard about it. You know you were coming back to Vegas. But what did you think the first time you walked in and set eyes on this place?
You know, I knew it was going to be nice, but it really, you know, it was even better than what I thought it would be. They did it the right way. They went above and beyond, and this place is beautiful. From the field to the clubhouse, to the kitchen, to the weight room, I mean, everything is legit.
I walked in, it was just such a wow factor. It was like the incredible shrinking stadium, because I feel like I walked into Coors Field and they shrunk it down to 10,000 seats. I mean, it is amazing. Tell me about the facility, just looking around. What do you see? Because it looks to me like a hitter's ballpark, where there's big alleys for extra base hits, things like that. For you, does that kind of excite you as a hitter?
Yeah, you know, the old field had that reputation too, and it was true. I mean, it's a hitter's field. And this one, just we haven't hit out here yet, but just looking at it, it's a fast infield. There's a lot of gaps, like you said. There's a lot of room for hits. So I think we'll have some fun here.
In your 30s, I know the goal is to get back to the show, man. You've been there. You've gotten to taste that. What are your plans and your expectations of yourself this year back in Las Vegas?
That's the goal, is to get back to the big leagues and help Oakland win. They got a good team up there. So to be able to contribute up there and win a World Series would be the ultimate goal.
Looking forward to a winning franchise down here. I know they're committed to winning at every level, so they're going to put you guys potentially in the best position to win. This team in general, people are familiar with it. We've been the AAA franchise of the Mets for the last 5 seasons. What should they look for in this team?
I'm still learning, you know, learning a lot about the guys too, but there's definitely some guys in the lineup here that are going to play in the big leagues for a long time. I mean, Murphy's gonna, you know, he's a legit catcher. We got guys.
All right. Out of Line, we're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 o'clock. I want to thank everyone for joining the show. I want to thank my dad, Dr. Erwin Feldman. Thanks, Eric Campbell. Of course, thanks to the producer, Chris Magner-Chapin, and Jose Sudden Death Vellante. We will be back next week, same time, same place. Look for us Facebook Live, maybe at a Lights game. Who knows? Maybe at an LV Aces game coming up soon. We'll be back next week. Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, brought to you by Cardinal Financial Company. Bye-bye.